players, past legends,
Things that didn't quite go the way in the first half. I think we had our noses in front at half time, but no, I don't recollect ever having any.
I think back then that was the rule. It was three games you played, and everyone just went, "Yeah, that's what it is." And got and yeah. I don't think we ever worried about, or was it fair? Everyone just went, "Oh, that's the rule." Bang.
Yeah, it was the rule. I mean, sure, you thought about it afterwards, but it was the rule, and it is what it is. And but because we had our chances, if we got blown away and whatever, you probably might have looked at it more and gone, "Well, the rule might not have favoured us," but then. Because we should have won, you go, well, they were the rules.
Yeah, I reckon that's a pretty fair way of putting it.
So,
Righto. Okay, 2002.
Yep.
You have probably handled getting dropped as club captain and still staying as Sturt Stalwart. You've handled that probably better than anyone else I've ever known, Threaders, and I've always had immense respect for you in that. In that way that you stayed so fiercely Sturt, but how did you sort of take it in at the time, and what was the communication like?
I think it could have been handled a bit better, maybe, and maybe it didn't need. I don't know. It is what it is, sort of thing. You know, disappointed. You know, they're. You know, it's not. You know, I still think about it a lot because I would have loved to have been a Sturt Premiership player. That would have probably, you know, would have meant you know, everything to me. But it wasn't to be, so you know, you can't change anything. So there's no point sort of dwelling on it too much because you know it's just sort of eats away at you. So
did you join in much with the celebrations and that side of it?
Oh, I knew the right time to leave. I think it was the chimney veiling.
Yep.
I was encouraged to go along, and I just felt there was a couple of pictures in the newspaper, and it was like they keep putting on this sad face in the news in the advertiser, and it's not about me.
Yep.
And you know, there was a couple of pictures of, oh, there he is, or, you know, or after the final siren went out in the oval, and the day after there's a picture of me sort of, and I thought, nah, I've got to just, it's, you know, they need to sort of enjoy this and me get the hell out of there. So the sad guy's not there all the time.
And you weren't going to Bali anyway?
I would have. Right. We'd had the birth of our first Jack.
Yeah, I was wondering where Jack fitted in there. Yep.
August. Yep. In August, I had decided I wouldn't, but you know, when you're involved in that sort of thing, you go. But circumstances arose, so you go, nah, I don't need to go to that either.
And
yeah. Well, just going back a little bit, you played your 200th in 2001 in front of 13,745 at the Parade. In the centenary match, obviously, Brodie Atkinson, and you play your 200th.
Did I?
Yeah.
I thought I played at Unley Oval against Central Districts and we got beaten.
I know. On my little stats here, officially on the Sturt site there, they're saying that just got beaten by Norwood in that match.
I'm getting mixed up.
I certainly remember the game because that was brilliant. Will. Dressed up like idiots and knickerbockers and stuff like that, but again, to have that crowd was amazing. And
it was a huge night that, and
yeah.
With the retro Guernseys and it was a great night.
It was absolutely
okay. So, in terms of then, Bali's happened. How did you? What was your involvement then afterwards? Got to ask that question, Chris.
I actually had also one of my best mates over there as well, Sam Eustace, who was over there in a different, just over there with another mate of mine as well. So sort of those sliding doors sort of things that they didn't go out that night because they've been surfing and doing whatever. And you know, wow. I didn't know that
because obviously I know Sammy played at uni, so obviously I know Sam. Yeah.
That's right. So yeah, you have those moments where you go, bloody hell, if you were over here, then we would have been out with you. And yeah, but it wasn't. But no, I remember the phone. I get a phone call from Graham Dunstan. And at that stage, it was like no one knew what the hell was going on, and probably took a while. But something that sat with me most was I remember getting hold of Michael Curtis in the airport at Bali, and you could just hear this frightened young bloke.
Yeah.
Still sort of sends shivers.
Yeah.
That no one, you know, should ever have to deal with that crap.
No, and look, it was one thing. We've had Weathers on the show, and I was actually doing an Auskick thing with him at Prince's, and I hesitated, and I went, Weathers, can I ask you about Bali? And he said, please do. I've been encouraged to talk about it. And then he sent me a USB stick of stuff we didn't see back here. That's the most confronting 8 minutes, 28 seconds I'll ever watch. And you know something's affected you when you remember the exact length. You see the Sturt guys come back and you see Weathers are under Julie. Obviously, knowing Julie for donkey's years. And so that really resonated. And Marnie rang me and said, hey, keep him talking. You're helping more than the psych. And it's something which is...
And I think there's still a couple that need to keep talking about it.
Yes. But you've just mentioned one who does. Yes.
Yeah. And, I remember that day they sort of were brought in the back door in a private room down at Adelaide Airport and coming in and again, just sort of going, what the fuck, these just frightened bunch of young kids.
Yeah.
It didn't make any sense.
Still doesn't.
What was the club's approach from that point of view as to how to handle it? Because it's something that no one had ever seen happen before.
I think they handled it absolutely brilliantly. I think Graham Dunstan was instrumental. He was absolutely amazing.
Michael was fantastic.
He just got around everyone. I don't remember the final. I do just remember that Mocker was amazing. And the whole club was. And what do you do? No one's ever experienced that before.
And that's
everyone did their best and, you know, and probably made some mistakes. But I think in general probably did a pretty good job of doing whatever you could.
And I said to Sticks, how do you reckon you handled it? Sticks's reply, I think, was brilliant. He says, Rubble, you're not given a manual on terrorism coaching when you're appointed coach. And I said, Sticks, that fucking nails it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What was your role as captain of the club at that stage? Had you decided to hang up the boots after the grand final, or was that something that happened a little bit later down the track?
Well, it happened a little bit later down the track. They had a bit of a memorial for myself, Andrew Geddes, and Bruce Lennon, and maybe Johnny Richter. Johnny might have retired the year before. I can't remember. But Sticks offered me to play on and have a bit of time off over summer and do whatever. And I thought that's a completely wrong thing to do. You know, if you're in, you're all in. I'm not. Obviously wasn't feeling great about the whole thing. So I think it was, again, best for myself and whatever to move on and retire.
And you did go and play at Prince's, and you did play on at least one flag, Threaders?
We actually had our 20-year reunion on Saturday for it. And it was a few of the guys, Tom Davies played in and Tom Katsaris and a few uni blokes that had played in a couple or whatever. And Tom Davies actually recollected, he goes, you and Geddes were completely off tap because we knew it was the only grand final you blokes had ever won. And you were both best on ground for at least 2 or 3 days.
I'm not totally shocked with that news.
Are you talking the last weekend or are you talking after the actual grand final?
We were both best on ground again on Saturday.
That's what I thought.
And Bruce, and sorry, and Brucey Lennon coached as well. So,
yeah.
That was pretty special.
Yeah. It was one day too with Weathers 300th at at Alberton, and you guys weren't playing. You were invited because it was Weathers 300th, and you were in the room, and you stand, and you got the Sturt guys are sort of thinking, "This is bizarre. What are we doing in here?" And I just took over and ignore this Sturt Nord bullshit. Right, this is for Weathers. Get involved. And then the Sturt guys came that night to the Nord auction night in respect to Weathers, and that was a fantastic night. And I just thought it was, you guys were awesome to show Weathers that respect as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, little Timmy was a big part of, you know, of the Sturt Football Club, and Nicky had a lot to do with the club for a long period of time, and again, their family. So yeah, no, we celebrate people and things happen and people move and for whatever reason, but yeah, there's no point, yeah. Shunting anyone for it.
And so you've then played at Princes, you played in the flag, retired. When did you then, what was you, was your first involvement back at Sturt, then afterwards after that, or what happened there and how you've ended up becoming, I think you're director of about 13, 14 years now at Sturt?
Well, Rick, funny enough, Rick McGowan got me, I played footy with Ricky at, he was another one that Mickey Noonan removed from North Adelaide. Who didn't have a bad career.
Yeah, he did all right. Yep.
And so he was appointed coach of Sturt, and he got on to me straight out. I'd sort of kept in touch a little bit. Rick always got on well with Rick, and he said, "Come out, I want you to be my runner." And so I started doing that, and then I reckon in one of the trial games, it was at Nord Oval, I jagged a hamstring. And he said, that's perfect. That's exactly kind of what I wanted, because I didn't really want you to be runner. I want you to be one of my assistant coaches.
Okay.
So ended up being assistant coach, and that was a good fun year because I love Rick, and we did pretty well. Rick was a really good coach, but we'd had the birth of our second child in that year, which was 2007. Yeah. And it was just hard work. I had a 4-year-old and a newborn, and you know, you're walking out of home on a Saturday at, I don't know, 10 o'clock, and coming home at 6 o'clock, and you know, it's not really fair on Andre at the time, and I thought I loved it, but. Didn't need to carry on doing that. So that ended that little foray, and then Matt Benson was always into me for years. He was always pestering me to sort of get involved and get on the board and do whatever. And again, it didn't because then you had kids, football, and busy time, busy life, and whatever. And eventually, the window sort of opened. I don't know, it's about 10 years ago, I think. Jason, who, you know, always loved Jason. And they just had a really good board at the time. I love Sue, Phil Halliwell, David Reynolds, the accountant Rick Good. Had a really cool board. It was just good fun going to the footy with these guys. And, you know, we've got great friendships, and we have particular days still together that we celebrate. And Jack Stevens, his old man, was part of it as well. But we sort of really enjoyed ourselves. And a few of those guys have left now, but so still there. But I love the footy. So
what's your exact role therefore as football director? What's your responsibilities in that way?
Well, it's the football department. So. Yep. You know, we're lucky we've got, obviously, we reappointed Marty Matner for 2 years, which is a great result. Chris Trapp, who's the football manager, who does a brilliant job, who coaches the reserve side as well. He's a really good administrator. And Jackson Lane, looking after the girls, and Oko, the coach for the girls, and Scotty Preble, who's the 18s coach, and Greg Crowden, the under 16s coach. So I suppose they report to me, but I suppose my role is I oversee them. They're good football people. They run things past me, but they're the experts, and we just make sure that they're doing the right things, which they do, and it makes it all pretty cool.
What was the initial thought of getting Marty Matner back to Sturt? Because it was a masterstroke the first time round.
Yeah, well, that was we were in. You know, things happen. You know, probably the match at the time with Nathan probably wasn't quite perfect. not, it was nothing bad, but just felt like it wasn't quite working. And obviously it was the end of his contract, and at the same time Marty became available, you know, he was released a little bit earlier from the Crows and whatever. And we certainly went through a process. It wasn't, I think people thought that we just, you know, moved Nathan on and went straight for Marty. We went through a proper process and interviewed and did the right thing. And you know, it was a few people applied for it and it were pretty good names, to be honest with you. You know, one of them was so good that he actually sort of said, look, if Marty's applying for it, I'm actually going to stand down because I'm pretty sure you'll probably end up going with Marty. But anyway, it's you know, yeah, I think we had a little bit of a lull, but we've had a good resurgence in the last couple of years under him, and good bit of stability. And I think, you know, he communicates really well with the players and has a good rapport with them all, and staff and supporters, and just works.
And he's driving that obviously from the top down. How much of the junior program does he oversee as well?
Oh, he's involved in a fair bit of it. You know, obviously Greg Crowden and Scotty Pribble do a lot of that from the 18s and 16s and Cowboy sort of down from there. But you know, he's over. He sort of gets involved a bit with the girls as well. It's one football club that we, you know, we're trying to be more inclusive. Obviously, the timings of the girls' season makes it a little bit awkward to be complete, but we're trying to do more and more to bring everything together. It's just, you know, it's not perfect, but we're sort of certainly working on all of that as we go.
Obviously, the timeline of the recent events the last couple of years, the new club rooms, fantastic facility down there. You guys have really done a great job of retrofitting that old grandstand, and now it stands amongst one of the best.
Oh, it's amazing. It's I think, you know, I know rule book could, you know, say the same about Norwood, but I think it's the premier ground, you know, in the Sandfall that just doesn't quite have a perimeter fence just yet. But
we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah. That's
the
facilities are amazing. The room upstairs with David Reynolds had a massive amount to do with,
and Darren Thomas obviously.
And other people, and yes.
Full credit to the duck for that though. What Darren Thomas Foods do supporting so many different things. The building at Westminster, etc. Ducks,
to be honest with you,
pretty incredible.
It's ridiculous, the generosity. It's well, it's not ridiculous.
Exactly. It is ridiculous.
It comes from the right place, but the people. Places that wouldn't be around without the generosity of the Thomas family is amazing. Yeah.
And when you think you almost shut the doors obviously the Norwood Sturt amalgamation for the AFL, but then North Adelaide potentially amalgamating, and then all of a sudden you've raised enough money to keep the doors open, and now you've got these fantastic facilities.
I mean, Jason still talks about, you know, 2010, I think it was, 11.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had unpaid ATO bills, like to the point where they were almost going, well, here are the keys. We're handing them back because I don't know how the hell we're going to get through this. And it was the work of the board at the time, which I wasn't a part of, but they rolled up their sleeves and did amazing things. And, you know, we cut our own salary cap. We didn't pay our players because it was irresponsible to work to a salary cap that you couldn't afford. So we purposely cut that, and the things that Rick Good at the time, who was the finance director, and obviously the generosity of certain benefactors, and you know, there's a heap of people who get involved to make sure of that thing. And now you sort of sit back and you don't rest on your laurels, but you're sitting in a reasonably good position at the moment, but still got to work really hard at it in the SNFL.
Absolutely. Well, the one person that obviously is the face of that is Sue Dewing.
A remarkable individual.
Fantastic achievement, not only for her, but for the SANFL in general. She's driving standards, I think, that a lot of clubs need to sort of try and emulate. And that probably leads me on to the next point, and we did sort of half talk about it a minute ago, was the fence issue that just trying to get a bit more security around Unley Oval.
A lot of false truths
are being put out there, but really at the end of the day, it's a community facility that you guys want to secure, not only for your players, but also for the safety of supporters and
I think
the financial side of it as well, with hiring portable fences, taking them up and down each home game makes it hard.
Yeah, well, it's obviously in public consultation at the moment, but I think it's paying the real truths. I think a lot of people think that there's going to be a couple of little gates from here to there. It'll be still a very wide open space. We have a certain amount of leased hours that we can use, and they won't be closed at that. They'll only be closed on ticketed events, and those spaces will be very wide open, and the fences themselves will be very visible and wide open. Obviously, there's no concept drawing, so you don't really know, but the main thing is that it will always be an open space to the public, and a very big open space to the public.
Now, some of the mistruths by the anti-fence mob, as you know, I rang you that day, Chris, and I worry that I can get called a lot of things. Naive's not one of them, and I was just really, I was angry and disgusted at the lies about Sue Dewing, which were being told that day, and I think you could probably have told in my tone of my voice that how stunned I was when I rang you, Chris, and and that's coming from a Nord supporter, for goodness sake, that I went along because I, go along, listen to the council and the consultation, and it was just staggering. It takes a fair bit to stun me, and I couldn't believe it.
I think there's a lot of SNFL clubs that are behind you guys in trying to make this a reality, and I think you've put a very good case forward for it to happen, but again, it's not in your hands, unfortunately.
And it's got to be remembered as well. It's not something that we drove. We certainly support it and want it, but...
It comes from the council.
And that's probably a very big point that might have been missed as well. It's not us actually putting it forward. Yes, we fully support it and want it, but we didn't put it forward.
It's a council asset, so they're looking to secure their asset, which is totally understandable in today's society. And I think a couple of weeks after this all got announced, you guys had a bit of an incident down there that probably lends itself to, a little bit of a fence to deter some of that behaviour.
Yeah, certainly the security of the general public and our people is paramount. So we'll see how it plays out. We're grateful for the support, and hopefully that it. There's so many more steps to go. It's a long way off, but if it happens, I think it'll be aesthetically pleasing and like the naysayers for the picket fence. I think everyone would say that having that picket fence around Unley Oval looks magnificent as well.
All right, mate. We'll get you out of here on this one here. Like we tend to do with all of our guests, we'd like to ask your top three or four that you've played with and played against in your career.
Ooh. There you go. I played with. I tend to go for your mates, I suppose. The Gettys and Lennons and these guys who are characters and Jay Viney was terrific. There's lots of them. But playing with Johnny Richter is. And Dean Woos on. So we just had a good time. I really loved that part of it. And I've named a few that are probably, there's not too many that didn't enjoy playing with and were good in their own rights in different ways. Playing against, probably, I think, you at that stage you were one on one with a full forward. And so I was like the. From rule books, you got the Pieris and the Primes, and
Tractor would have been shattered if you hadn't given him a mention.
Big Richo from West Adelaide.
Yes,
Scotty Hodges was probably one that I always was up for that one. We had South had Danny Del Rey 1 year, and that was formidable.
He was quick off the mark, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was big, and he had a big ass. He was a big boy. and the John Fidges and those sort of guys. And yeah, so no, it was, as I said, it was one on one back then, and it was good fun.
Now, one thing too, Threaders. So I've umpired, you know, Threaders' sons and that a fair bit, and had a bit of fun with Threaders on the sidelines. And we once at Saturday, where the sun comes over at Prince's, it's a prick of a spot on the ground. I asked Threaders to move the sun one day. I don't know if you can remember that, Threaders.
Yeah, you laughed
at that. And then let's just say there may have been one coach at Prince's where his enthusiasm was far better than his football knowledge and that. And Threaders' son might have started at centre-half back, and the ball came out the middle. He got the ball, passed it off, ran down, passed it off, and had a ping at goal the first 30 seconds of the game. And the coach was screaming at him to get back to centre-half back. And he's gone past me, and I've said, ignore that. That's exactly what we want to see you do as you get older. That's exactly what you expected. That was superb. And Threaders walked out at quarter time and said, what'd you say to him, Rulebook? And I told you guys, and you've just gone perfect. I don't have to say anything now. So
Yeah.
And quick, you better give your better half a mention too, Threaders. Guy's a great support and always enjoy her company. So give your lovely wife a mention there as well, mate.
Yeah, no, Andre, she's brilliant. Always been number one, and you know, as many mothers do, having three men in the house can be hard work. But we're lucky we've got two really good boys, and Andre is the foundation of all that. She's quite brilliant.
And she's very supportive of your Colts in their footy as well.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
All right, Chris, thank you very much for your time today. We've done this interview, obviously, in the studio, but we're putting together some equipment to do some on-site, and we'd love to visit Sturt, and maybe after one training session we might be able to get a couple of players on and do a live broadcast from there. Yeah. That'd be fantastic.
Sounds good, Pete. No, excellent. No, thanks for your time, guys. It's been good.
Thanks, Fred. Thanks. Appreciate it, mate.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. See you, mate. Bye.
Liking this podcast? Please like, rate, and subscribe.